There it is. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I'm speaking a little quieter because my daughter is sleeping.
So I'm going to wake her up.
We'll try not to whisper because that could be annoying. But
although it could make them listen even closer.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as always, I'm Steve Patera, joined by my good friend.
Evan Shaw Mumford.
Awesome. And, episode 42.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so it's weird trying to talk quiet, by the way. Yeah.
It's fun, though. I've done that in customer service every now and then. Like, when I worked at Highland Park Market, there were a few times where the lights in our department would go off and they just start flashing and coming back on. I guess it was some sort of, I don't know, energy kind of flux thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But people would come in and they'd start whispering because they thought the store was closed. So they'd come over and be like, "Are you guys still open?" And I just follow along. I go, "I don't know, let me check."
That's
just
funny.
Just see how long I can keep the whisper game going.
Well, that just reminds me of Impractical Jokers.
Yes.
All sorts of shenanigans. They had like marathons of that over Christmas break, which is great. Now we're off topic completely. So we're going to do a breakdown. We've got some pretty cool news in the Bacon Smiles family. Mm-hmm. Evan has a new addition to he and Jen's family.
That's correct.
We'll talk about that. We both had confirmation class. You at St. Teresa of Calcutta, me at Sacred Heart in Bloomfield. And we had two different topics. You had a teaching mass.
That's right.
I had peace and nonviolence, bullying in school and stuff like that. Then you have music.
Correct. Yep.
And then scripture of the day is Mark 3, 1 through 6. Pretty well-known story of Jesus. And St. Anthony of Egypt is our saint of the day.
Very nice.
And then you, of course, got News
of the
Weird. Yeah,
to wrap
that's right.
things up.
All right, so let's just jump right up into it. So, good news.
Good news, yeah. Jen's been wanting to adopt a cat for a long time. And so over the weekend, we ended up bringing home a little 11-month-old kitten. And I think technically she's still a kitten, because I think once it's a year old, then it's
a cat.
Then it's a full-grown adult cat.
And now all of a sudden you're cat people.
That's right. And I said to her after like the first day, I said, "So you're okay with just one for now, right?" And she gave me a look and goes, "Why would you be open for more?"
Oh, boy.
And I said, "I'm okay with one for now. Let's just
forever.
Sit this one out, and once we're adjusted to this, maybe we'll consider getting her a friend.
Yeah.
But great cat, very chill, very relaxed, and very affectionate. Like,
okay,
demands affection, and is like, I know what I want. I want a snuggle.
So, big question when it comes to cats, indoor only?
Indoor, absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah, because the cats that she raised and grew up with were outdoor cats.
So she just fed raccoons in the neighborhood.
Pretty much. It's funny because there's a joke that goes around in the family because ever since we were dating, she had three cats in the house, and now there's just one. And the one that's left is the weirdest cat you would ever meet. Very, very bizarre. And so we make a joke of course, the only cat that's left behind
is the weirdo.
It's one that the coyotes look at and go, "Dude, I'm not going anywhere near that." So Jen was just like, I'm not dealing with that anymore. She goes, we're having an indoor cat. And I said, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Like I said, I just think if you have outdoor cats, I know I'm probably going to get some hate mail. Steve@baconsmiles.org.
Very good.
I don't think outdoor cats are really pets. And I get that, like, cats, once they're outdoor cats, they're predators. They're a predatory animal, and that's what they want to do. They want to hunt and everything like that. If you domesticate it and they hang out inside, they can be kind of pets.
Right.
But, yeah, outdoor cats, I don't think that's a pet. I think your willingness to just feed a wild animal at that point, you know, raccoons and stuff like that.
And sometimes they don't even come home at night. You know, they'll come back a day or two later.
You know, so see, something happens to them, you literally never know, right? So it's just all of a sudden that cat never came home, you know? So there's also that, and it's, I don't know, I'm just not a big fan of outdoor cats because it's just like,
yeah.
Oh, go fend for yourself.
Yeah. Okay. See you someday. Hopefully.
Yeah. But okay. So, what kind of cat is it?
So it's a domestic long hair, and And it's got this nice patches of white and gray on it.
Cool.
And so, yeah, 11 months old. And her name that was given by the foster home was Hannah.
Okay.
And Jen says, I have a student whose name is Hannah. Let's name it something else, because otherwise that would be a little weird.
Okay.
So we ended up going with Haley.
Yeah.
We tested that a little bit. We're like, it's kind of close to Hannah.
Yeah.
And she doesn't respond to it, but we went,
sounds nice. She's a cat.
That's right. That's right. She runs the house. She responds to what she wants.
She does whatever she wants. Do you remember, did I ever tell you what Buster's name was?
No.
So I adopted him from the Newington Humane Society. Yeah. His name was Brent.
Brent.
B-R-E-N-T. Brent. Come here, Brent.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
Buster's. So much more fun. You can't keep a straight face when you call him.
No. Brent. So are you going to tweet out a picture at the at Bacon Smiles?
I'll do that. Yeah, awesome. I also have a picture on our Instagram.
Okay.
On my Instagram.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So. No, that's awesome. Yeah, awesome. Congratulations. Cool.
Thank you.
Growing family.
We haven't slept well yet.
No.
The first night we had her at 3 a.m., we started off where we had her in the bedroom, where we just said, that way she can adjust to being with us and this and that. So we closed the bedroom door, went to sleep. 3 a.m., she does parkour on all our furniture in the bedroom. I'm woken up to hear, thunk, thunk, plop, thunk. She's jumping from furniture to furniture.
Couch to couch to chair to ottoman.
So the next night we left the door open and we just went, you can go out if you want to. So
I like the explanation, parkour. Yeah. Just getting its exercise.
Like, really?
That's ridiculous.
Gotten the cat.
So I'm pretty sure Eva does not feel sorry for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she has been getting up. So pray for my wife. She has been getting up every hour on the hour.
Oh, no.
Zoe has entered what is known as the 4-month sleep regression. Things that other parents don't tell you about. So I texted you earlier and said, hey, Zoe, we're putting Zoe asleep. Hopefully she'll stay asleep. And that's why we're kind of a little more subdued tonight. Yeah. But... So she was asleep, and then she immediately woke up, like, 10 minutes before you got here. So Eva was nursing, and she just put her back. So Eva, I think, just went to bed. And we've probably woken Eva up about 5 times since starting this.
Probably.
For the past 3 nights, every hour, she's been getting up. And I can try to get up, but now, because of this weird sleep regression and, like, comfort nursing and all this other stuff, won't take a bottle. She had been so great with taking bottles so that way I could help in the middle of the night. Not trying to have it. Nope. So, prayers for my wife because she is operating on very little sleep. And, we need your prayers.
Yeah.
Because, Zoe is a great baby, as you can see from the picture I shared.
on Instagram.
On the Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
Eva posted a great picture the other day with her smile.
Yeah, she turned 4 months yesterday. And, the group of pictures that Eva posted yesterday is so amazing. So you can find it on my Facebook, Steve Patira, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And it's adorable. I can't believe she's 4 months.
Yeah.
I forgot to add that to the list of things to talk about.
We'll make sure to talk about it.
Yeah, we're doing it now. I just like letting people into how my mind works.
Right.
So, 4 months old.
Yeah.
I can't even explain. So, she's grown so much, but mostly in her torso. She's got those adorable, cute little legs.
Yeah.
But the chubbiest thighs in the world. She may be the most adorable baby on the planet. I know I have a bias, but she's adorable.
She is very, very cute.
No, I'm not hiding my bias at all. She's my daughter. Yeah. I think she's the most beautiful baby ever. But yeah, so it she has been every hour in the middle of the night waking up. Like, she just, and it's like startling because she'll just go from asleep to like, wow, just out of nowhere. So, any of you who have been through it understand sleep deprivation is a thing, and Eva's not getting much sleep, and then I have to go to work, so she's up with Zoe all day long, very little naps for Zoe, and when Zoe naps, Eva's like, oh, fine, I can brush my teeth, I can take a shower, I can, you know, so it's lots and lots of prayers.
So you were saying this is kind of a common thing, this 4 month old regression. Is there an average time of how long this period lasts?
I think it's normally a few weeks. I from what, you know, I see online, but it can be a little longer than that. But yeah, it's just known as the 4 month sleep regression, and so the worst thing is there was like a week long tease of where she was slept like an 8 hour night. Like,
I remember over. That.
I'm like, yeah, we're through this. We're doing great.
We're over the hump.
We're over the hump. She slept from like 9 p.m. to like 5, 6 in the morning. That's awesome. No, not anymore.
That's helping you, you know, rest up.
Yeah, exactly. Prepare for this part.
Yeah.
But still amazing, though. Still amazing. I'm a dad. Still have those moments where it's like, I'm in charge of this little human being. Who allowed this? but yeah, so Zoe's 4 months, so
awesome.
So you had a class, and it was a teaching mass. All right.
Yeah, Father Marchin and Father Tim at our parish did a teaching mass just for the ninth graders.
Okay.
So we've done those every now and then. I think the last one that I sat in on was with Father Steve.
Okay.
And that was great. For some of our teenagers, they just go, oh, this is so long. Because they basically do the whole mass and then
pause.
But it's
so awesome to understand each individual thing and why each tradition and what the way that they hold things and the way that they pray over things and what where that comes from and the history behind things and the Jewish traditions that led to the celebration of the Catholic Mass and the things that go into that. So that's why if you ever have the opportunity to go to a teaching Mass and you haven't gone to one, I highly recommend
it. I know both Jen and I have really appreciated it. And talking it with Linda, she says she has loved it too.
Yeah.
And I that was one of the things that I talked with my students about after class, because we ended up having a little get back into the classroom, kind of hash it all
Which
out,
is
talk
important.
About it. Yeah,
important
and just kind of discuss what we thought about it. And I said, you know, you might have thought it was long tonight, but if you go to Mass or even in a couple of years looking back, I hope you look back at that and you in retrospect, you
anytime
got something
you go to Mass, hopefully you remember one thing about the teaching Mass.
Right,
to
and
just
go,
be able
oh, that's,
to...
that is right. That's cool. You
exactly.
know, something where it might not hit you now, but later on, just
absolutely.
Hang on to that, and you never know what'll hit you in the future.
Yeah, and it's so important to really understand celebrating the Mass in all the parts and, you know, just to really respect what's happening, you know? So it's just, that's an awesome class. I always really appreciate it. Yeah. And Father Stephen, I think, was the last one that I went to too.
Yeah.
And it's really, really awesome. Father Stephen does an amazing job.
Yeah.
So I had class this past weekend. No, previous week, 2 weeks ago. And it was on peace and nonviolence and bullying and acceptance and stuff like that. So it was a really good opportunity. We did the activity. I'm sure you remember it. The design your perfect school and draw it out, draw a map. What's taught? What are the rules and stuff like that? And the kids always get the most into designing it to look like a castle or have a moat and all this other stuff. But the real meat and potatoes is how do you want people treated? How would you treat and what would you teach? You know, what's the stance that your school has? You know, and peace and nonviolence, and how do you have disagreements? And we kind of started this conversation of where kind of what I'm noticing a lot in today is you can't have a civil disagreement anymore.
No.
It's really hard, and especially with social media, people get fired up, and people read into tone on the written word, which is impossible. You can't know the tone of the written word. So there's people that get really hostile, and I'm wondering, how do we combat, and this kind of came up in my class, how do we combat the immediate nature of feeling attacked when someone disagrees with you? Because I feel like we didn't used to have that, right? Mm-hmm. But I even find myself doing it, like, when you're just like, yeah, well, here's how I feel on the topic, and someone's like, no, I don't agree with you. And immediately, like, you're put on your heels, like, what do you mean you don't agree with me?
Well, that happened to my sister the other day. She was in the hallway, and in the music department, I remember this from being in the music department at school. A lot of kids like to sit in the hallways and just, it's a nice kind of relaxing atmosphere, you know, in between classes and during free time, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And sit out with their legs spread out and everything. And teachers try to come through and they're saying, excuse me, move your legs, please. But the kids have to be asked to do that. And, and my sister ended up speaking up on the teacher's behalf and saying, you know, we really should be more considerate, saying this to her friends, after her friends were like, why does he have to ask? It's this and that. And so all of a sudden, she's countering what they're saying. They're feeling defensive.
Yeah.
So what they come back with is, why are you mad?
Yeah. Well,
and she's like, how do I argue with that? And
I'm just like, to say, like, well, I'm not mad. And that's the other thing, too, is I get that a lot because I'm kind of an easily excitable person. Right. Those who know me, like, I'm like, hey, but it's more along the lines of when I'm talking, I'll get louder just because I'm passionate. Like, I'm a passionate person. Right. I talk about things. Eva hates it when we're just literally talking about something will come up in the news and I'm like, just feel like we're losing like people, morality or whatever comes up in the news, because it's normally bad, and I'm just talking and I'm just like, I get amped up because I'm passionate about things, and I'm passionate about our young people, and I'm passionate about our young church, and I just feel like we're losing the ability to have intelligent conversations with disagreement.
Right.
And how do we combat that? How do you teach our young people to be able to just listen? Mm-hmm. Listen to the other person's side, and whether you agree with them or not, still have a civil conversation about what you disagree with them on. It's hard.
Yeah.
And especially if it's something especially if you're a passionate person, and because that can be seen as you're being aggressive. Mm-hmm. Like why are you getting mad? Why are you being aggressive? It's hard. It's hard for me to just to try to like tone that down.
Right.
You know, and it's, I don't know. Have you noticed that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And just seeing it in my social groups and seeing it on social media and just people exploding with rage about this or that. Yeah,
and just like the immediate like loss of any civility in the conversation, where immediately people are cursing. Immediately people are just demeaning the other person. Like, you're an idiot because you don't agree with me.
Right, exactly.
And that's like, but wait a minute. Can't we have a disagreement without immediately calling people names? And that's kind of, you know, what I like to talk about when it comes to, like, peace and nonviolence and nonbullying and acceptance and stuff like that. Like, can we get back to civility? Or maybe, am I just remembering things differently where I feel like I used to be able to have civil conversations with people without it just degrading into name calling?
Well, one thing I remember from the book Tuesdays with Maury, I haven't read that book in years, but there was an instance where Maury, who was a college professor, walked into his classroom and everyone's waiting for the class to begin. He just stood there on the podium and just kind of looked down for like maybe a minute or two in just silence. Mm-hmm. And everyone else was just, you know, kind of looking around like, what's going on? No one said anything, but they were feeling a little uncomfortable. And he looked up and smiled and said, that was nice, wasn't it? He says, why do we get nervous about silence?
Yeah.
And I think for and you know this with the teenagers, as soon as you give them a second of silence, it's all chatter.
Oh yeah,
people do not.
It
in general like silence
groups and I'm speaking in generalities. Yeah. I know there's some people that can so understand. Groups of teenagers cannot be quiet
right.
without being instructed to do so. Meaning like, mm-hmm. all right, we're going to do 30 seconds of silence. We're going to do 3 minutes of quiet.
Right.
And it's hard. Dude, I've worked with teenagers for 15 years. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
Right. But if we're able to get more comfortable with the silence, I think that would make us better listeners.
Yeah.
And then we don't automatically feel like, oh, well, I have to have something to come back at this person or you know, or I have to have an argument ready right now.
And the need to be right. Like mm-hmm. and the need to just be like, no, I'm right, you're wrong. There are absolute truths, mm-hmm. right, in this world. And I'm not going to start an argument on absolute truths and whatever. I'm just not. And that's not where I'm going with this. All I'm saying is you need to come to an understanding that what you have as your thinking and what they have on their thinking is different. Mm-hmm. And you can come to a civil disagreement and be fine with it. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about is you can end the conversation still disagreeing. Right. You don't have to just all of a sudden be like, oh, well, I agree with you. And that's the only way to end a disagreement. The problem is that word. Saying that you have a disagreement has now become an argument. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm like, wow, that's weird. That's like a weird thing that's happened. Right. Where how did we get from just understanding, say, hey, I don't agree with you. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with your thought process on that. Like, how did you get there? What made right. you think that way? What happened there? Okay, no, yeah, I still don't agree with you, but okay, now I get how you got to where right. you're at. And it just being able to say, no, I still don't agree with you, but mm-hmm. that's cool. I still kind of respect, like, not kind of, yeah. but I still respect you as a person. And I totally am fine with disagreeing with you.
Because some of my favorite conversations I've had with people are with people that are in a completely different wavelength than I am.
Yeah.
Because either I've learned something from them and I've actually, I feel like I've learned something and I go, okay, I can kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
Or there are some people where I used to work with a guy who was Buddhist and we'd have these theological discussions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I go, that's an interesting thought process. You solidified my beliefs a little more. Well, I wouldn't say that to him.
No, but it's different.
It actually makes my beliefs stronger because I'm mm-hmm. like, no, that makes me have more questions that you just brought up, whereas my stuff answers those questions
exactly.
more.
Exactly. And that kind of leads me to the fact where it's like when you're having a conversation and someone's asking you questions about your faith, you even if it's something where you're like, yeah, I don't know that off the top of my head, it's easy to feel like you're being, you know, it's easy to feel defensive. Mm-hmm. And we actually all, me included, you have to come to a point where you're just like, oh, yeah, let's talk about this. Okay, mm-hmm. let's, you know. And it's one thing where it's just like we also have to come to the terms with the fact that, like, we will disagree with people. Mm-hmm. And that's where my conversation in my class went, where it's like, you can disagree with people. You can have disagreements without having arguments. Mm-hmm. And you don't. And then, you know, of course, we talked about bullying and stuff like that. And the problem with the teenagers today is they have been so drilled in on anti-bullying that they just don't get what bullying is anymore. Mm-hmm. They have been just bombarded and they're like, bullying doesn't happen. I'm like, bullying happens. It's just a matter of what you call bullying. Mm-hmm. And I had one kid who just said, like, oh, well, they could turn their phones off. Like, come on now. That's not the answer. You have to be able to go and talk to someone. You have to be able to understand the level that things happen at now. And so we talked about that as well, where it's like, mm-hmm. this is a total different level of what I call harassment that right. happens nowadays, where you just don't feel safe anywhere, rumors are being spread. Bullying is happening at a totally different level. And so we talked about that. And then, of course, we talked about what we're called to do as Christians and as Catholics. Mm-hmm. We're called to be uplifting. We're called to be the light of the world to others. We're God's light. God's light should shine through us. I'm not saying, like, I'm going to be the light of the world. It's basically, I will use God's light to shine on others. And I try my best, you know, and it's, I'm just, you know, I'm trying to come at it from, like, and when I talk with teenagers is what I mean. I'm trying to come at it from the most honest perspective as I can. We're not asked to be perfect. We never will be. I will never be perfect. I will be this humble sinner that God uses to the best of my abilities, you know, and God doesn't call the perfect because we aren't perfect. He uses our brokenness to help others. He uses what we've been through. So if you've been through a bullying situation or something like that, God can use that to help others that are also going through that. And that's an amazing, beautiful thing. But when I talk to teenagers, it's basically trying to get them where they're at and tell them, like, no, we are called to be better. We are not called to live at whatever the moral standing is today. Because the moral standard of today is just non-existent. Mm-hmm. So if you've set the bar so low, it's like, well, I'm not doing that bad. No, we're called to be better than that. And so that's where the conversation ultimately went, which is, you know, kind of awesome. You know, I like having really the intellectual, calm conversations about stuff like that. And then, of course, I like having fun. And so, like, the school activity and stuff like that was really fun. And just the talking and everything else that went along with it. It went really well. It was actually really awesome. Yeah. And then you got music.
Got music. Yeah. Coming up this Friday, Ren Collective Irish Band.
Okay.
Has a project coming out called Good News. And then a week from this Friday, Wow Gospel 2018 comes out. If you're into gospel music, a little more urban sound, that's always a great album to check out, album series. Awesome. And then looking ahead to February, Michael W. Smith, we talked about this before. I don't know if I mentioned this note, but he's got two projects coming out.
Really?
In February. Yeah, he's going to be
always
coming out
working.
He's got A Million Lights coming out. And then he just announced that he's got Surrounded, which is a worship album, coming out the following Friday. So he's got,
his worship stuff is always awesome.
Yeah, he just released a single for that out to radio as well. So you might be hearing that soon on
K11. That's awesome.
And Spotify. And then also coming out in February, Audrey Assad has her new project coming out called Evergreen.
Okay.
Nice little indie project
that's great.
Coming out in February too.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Kicking off the season of Lent.
Yeah. So I want to talk about our saint of the day before I get to the scripture. Saint Anthony of Egypt lived a life of solitude and was a hermit for a long time. But it's actually pretty cool because in the description of him, it says no saints are actually antisocial. So he did go out and spread the word. So he lived in the 200s and the 300s, and he lived to be 105 years old.
Wow.
When he was in his 60s, he actually went and was fighting for the faith, and he had basically come to the conclusion that he was going to be martyred because he was going into anti-Christian areas and saying, hey, Jesus is the Christ. And there was a ton of people basically saying, like, no, that's not true. And he was very, very much in danger. And so that was in his 60s. He was still doing that when he was 88 years old, still embattled in the defending of our faith.
Wow.
And, you know, he then kind of like recoiled back to his hermit life in his 90s, but still lived another 15 years. And, died at 105 years old in the 3rd and 4th century. From 251 to 356 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just amazing. So, Saint Anthony of Egypt, like, a true, it just, Just a little other side note is they said his life really resembles that of St. Francis of Assisi, where he took to heart the part of the scripture that says, sell everything you have. And he did that. And that's why he lived life as a hermit and just lived a very simple and holy life. And so that's what he was called to do. And he sold everything he had and devoted his life to Christ.
Wow.
Isn't that just amazing? Excellent. Right?
Yeah, that's great.
So, St. Anthony of Egypt, pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, our gospel, also pretty cool, is the story of Jesus. So, it's from, for those of you who read along at home, it's Mark 3, 1 through 6. Again, he entered the synagogue. There was a man there who had a withered hand. They watched him closely to see if he would cure him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. He said to the man with the withered hand, come up here before us. Then he said to them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath rather than to do evil, to save life rather than destroy it? But they remained silent, looking around at them with anger and grieved at their hardness of heart. He said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately took counsel with the Herodians against him to put him to death. The gospel of the Lord.
Praise thee, Lord Jesus Christ.
So, and of course the word I struggle on is Herodians, because Herod was the ruler of the lands at the time, who was very much threatened by Jesus and was basically tried to kill him as a baby. So, therefore...
kind of goes back to our earlier discussion about feeling threatened.
Yeah, Jesus cures a man who had a clubbed hand. His hand was withered and he could not open it. And Jesus was like, aren't we supposed to do good on the Sabbath? Right? No? Nothing? No one's going to say anything? Hello?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm just going to heal this guy, and then that's going to make you guys mad, and your ruler's probably going to try to kill me. So I'm the son of God, and I don't care. Mm-hmm. I just love the moments where just Jesus is kind of just like, no, this is who I am, and this is what I'm going to do, and And that's where, we've talked about before, Jesus was not meek. Jesus was an amazing, holy presence on earth, but he was not meek.
No.
He was not weak-willed. He was not quiet. He was not. He was reserved when he needed to be reserved, and he was not when he needed not be.
He challenged a lot of ways that people were thinking, especially the religious.
Yes, yeah, and that's where, that was the part of that, like, he was just kind of like, he was like, yeah. Are we not called to do good on the Sabbath? And he's looking around, and everyone's just stayed silent. And so then he's looking at them mad, because he's like, you know what we're called to do. You know what my Father has called you to do. Yeah. Why do you stay silent? Why do you help? What are you doing? Hmm. And he's just mad because they've hardened their hearts. Mm-hmm. And that's an amazing way to write it. And so just think about what Mark was thinking as he was recalling this event, as he was writing this all down. It's like Jesus was mad at them because they had let their hearts not feel for this man. Hmm. They let themselves be hardened and be kind of just just evil against this man who had a deformity to his hand, and they just could not think compassionately towards this man, And so Jesus was mad at them. Jesus was like angered and just could not believe that they would not think, hey, we should help this man.
Right.
I don't know. How did you, what did you think
about that? No, I agree with you. I think you hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, so that's our gospel today. You got news of the weird, right?
News of the weird. So this story comes out of London. It's from a little coffee shop called the Tea Terrace. And they started at the end of last year a new way of giving their customers a fun little cup of coffee.
Okay.
Basically, they've created an app where you can take a selfie with it, send the picture over to the cafe, and then when you order your coffee, they actually have a machine that prints your selfie in the froth.
No way.
Of your coffee.
What?
Yeah, so you can drink yourself.
Oh, unbelievable. But wait a minute. How does that work?
And they call it the selfie chino.
The selfie chino.
Yeah, you can either have it put into a frappuccino or a hot chocolate.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
How much? No. Okay.
And that's $7.50.
For a hot chocolate that has your picture on it.
Yeah, yeah. See, if I was taking a selfie of myself first thing in the morning and then had to drink it, I'd be very nauseous, and I'd see that picture and go, oh, get that away from me.
I just, my thing is, okay, so who designed this machine that can just print your picture into the froth on a latte and a cappuccino? Like, who designed it?
Well, what's funny is the owner of the Tea Terrace told the newspaper article, due to social media, the dining experience has completely shifted. It's not enough anymore to just deliver great food and great service. It's got to be Instagram worthy.
Instagram worthy. That's ridiculous. I find it to be utterly ridiculous that you can't just drink your coffee,
right?
That you have to take a picture and have. I think okay. So then you have to. All right, now
take a picture of your selfie.
Yes,
looking back at you from your coffee.
You're probably taking a selfie of you drinking your selfie so that you can put that out on Instagram. So you probably Instagram
do it all by your selfie. Too.
Yeah. So you probably took your Instagram photo of you in the morning, sent it out. Then that machine takes it, so you've already done that picture to Instagram.
Yeah.
Then you're going to take a picture of the coffee on its own. But that's then you're going to take a selfie of you drinking your coffee.
Right.
So
you just break the internet that way.
Yeah, that's it. You know, you just so what we got to do is get multiple selfie sticks.
Right.
So you can get it on multiple angles, so that way it's a selfie of a selfie of a selfie.
Yeah.
Of a selfie. I think we're in an inception.
We gotta go to London, Steve. visit the Tea Terrace.
How much is the machine? Is what I want to know.
No clue.
Who paid for this?
But it's apparently a hit because they said within that week over 400 of the personalized drinks have been sold.
Since when? How long?
So. I don't know how many days after this started, this article was posted, but they said over 400 of the personalized drinks have been sold since they launched on Saturday, with the hashtag #SelfieChino going viral across several social media platforms.
#SelfieChino.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. I mean,
I wonder if they'd be willing to do that over at Silk City Cafe.
I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say my brother-in-law would say no. They do some nice art in the froth. But, yeah, I doubt that my brother-in-law would do
no,
that.
No, probably not.
That music means it's time to wrap up our podcast, episode 42 in the books. As always, reach out to us, steve@baconsmiles.org. @_BaconSmiles on Twitter, Bacon Smiles Ministry on Facebook. You can find us basically any way you want. Yeah. Reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. Anything you want us to pray for, thanks so much to continue to pray for me and my wife and my daughter Zoe. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate the support as the music keeps getting louder and louder. We just really appreciate everything. So, as always, I'm Steve Patera.
Evan Shaw Mumford.
Keep smiling and God bless.